This is an interview with Tommy Knowles of Pomona Park, Florida, on February 7th, 1985. This is Marianne McDonald.
I really wasn't very, very prepared, but she had a pair to lend me. She was really sweet. It helped a lot. Well, what I thought I'd do is I have a lot of kind of nets and bolts questions. You know, like how do you set a net to do this and that? And then I have a bunch of sort of opinion questions too that I've been asking people, and but I thought first we could start out and just I wanted to ask you again something that I was talking about in the fish house, just sort of how you started and how you learned to fish, because you started when you were little.
Yeah. Just hand down from my dad. He was a fisherman. And
now had he fished in Georgia before
No, he was sharecropper in Georgia.
So he came from farming to fishing.
Yeah.
He must have liked fishing a lot better.
Well, it's, yeah. Yeah, that's how I got started, was following him around.
Did your brothers go
all
around
of them?
Too? All of them?
All of them. We, as growing up at the house, all of us fished, and there was, let's see, one, two, three, four brothers.
Oh, wow.
And myself, and all of the brothers except one got into the fishing coming up through. Now the youngest one, he didn't. He did just a little bit, but by the time he came along, all of us older ones had left home, and Dad had just about quit fishing then at that time. So so he didn't get in as much, but all the rest of us did, and that's how we did it. It was just from going out with Dad and doing. We started out with two or three traps of our own right over here.
So it was traps then?
Yeah, that's all we fished was traps.
Oh, you
wire
didn't
traps.
Do trot lines?
Yeah, we did trot lines.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah. We did the trot lines too. We call them cat lines, but yeah, we would do those. As a matter of fact, when I was in high school, every day in the afternoons when I come home from school, me and another guy would take our cat lines and bait them up. And then we'd go put them out that night, and we'd spend a night in a swamp, and then we'd pick them up the next morning at daylight and be back to the house and go in and get your bath and then go to school. Yeah, you go in and get the bath and go to school. And I did that for 2 years.
Oh,
in my,
no, really?
Yeah, in my last 2 years in school, we did that. Of course, there's only certain times of the year that you would do this particular cat lining.
When would you do that kind of?
In the winter. In the winter and spring. It's what we call jump lining. And that's where you fish the line close to the shore and you float the line on top of the water.
Instead of putting weights on it
so
it's down
right,
low?
Yeah, right. This particular type of jump lining is we would fish them on top of the water. And
where did that term jump?
Because you would put them out in the evening. You'd put them out at first dark, and then you'd pick them up in the morning before the boat traffic. And you would move from one place to the next. You would never fish the same place two nights in a row. So you would that's where the term come from, is you would jump from this spot to this spot to fish the next night. So you just jump down the shore. Yeah, because you could catch out what was in this particular area this night, and then you'd go to the next area. And then in three or four nights, you could go back and start all over again.
Now, are the catfish you were catching, they would be territorial then? They'd sort of hang around in one little area?
Some places were better than others, yeah. This particular type of fish we was fishing for is a red cat. And we was fishing for him whenever he was in his spawning period.
Right.
And he spawns in the grass, in the eel grass. And that's how we would fish close to shore and do that kind of thing, yeah.
Wow. Now, those cat lines, how many hooks would they have on them?
Most of them are what they call 500 hook lines. When you make a cat line, you have 500 hooks on it, basically. Now, some people have less. Some people have 300, 400. But most of them are no longer than 500 hooks per cat line. But then you can attach them together, and then you've got another 500. But that's basically a cat line is 500 hooks. When you refer to the guy, how many lines did you run? He say, well, he run four lines, 2,000 hooks, because
wow.
you've figure it up. And, yeah.
That sounds like so many hooks to me.
It's a lot.
To bait it, yeah. To bait them and all. How? Yeah. I mean, how long would it take someone who's pretty good to do, to run one line, to pick it up and take the fish off if they caught one and bait it again?
Gosh. Well, when you're jump lining, you don't do that. When you're jump lining, you bring it in.
Oh,
you put it in a bucket. You take it up, and as you're taking it up and putting it in the bucket, then you just knock the fish off of the hook. And then you bring it back to the house in the bucket, and then someone at the house then runs it back out of the bucket and puts it back on the box. Have you seen the boxes? With
no,
the
but somebody was telling me about one. I'd like to see it.
I got some up here, and I'll show them to you.
That's so the line won't get tangled?
That's right. Each hook has an individual slot on the box, and the line goes in the middle of the box, and the hooks are in the little slots. And then you bait the hooks while it's on the box.
Oh, so that's much easier.
Yeah, you can.
It takes less time.
Yeah, you can do that sitting right here. You just put a little. We use what we call hardback shrimp. So it's a little grass shrimp. You put those on, like right here at the table, you could do it.
Or watching TV.
Yeah, matter of fact, Cindy and I did that for a lot of years.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Romantic
yeah,
evening
yeah,
with the shrimp and the jump
yeah,
box. You call that a jump box?
No, you call it a cat line box.
Cat line box,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, cat line box. And it's a four-cornered box, and it has layers in it, or tiers. Each tier is 100 hooks, and you can take the tier off. It's five tiers, you see. And you can, when you run the line out and it takes off the first 100 hooks off of the first tier, then you just take that tier off completely, and then you're going off for the next, and you do that for four more times, and you run all the hooks off. And the line, you just crank them. When you go out, you tie the anchor on in the float, and you throw that overboard to the end of the cat line. And then you run the motor, and the hooks just come out just bap, bap, bap like that.
That's so smart.
And you turn,
that's ingenious.
Of course, now that's the way it's done now. Back when we were doing it, back when I was in school and all like that, you paddled it out. You had two people.
Didn't get quite
no,
as fast.
That's right. You had one guy in front, and he was paddling the boat down the shore, and the guy in the back was feeding the line out, one hook at a time, like this, you see.
Oh.
Much slower than... Now you can take, gosh, you can put 500 hooks out now in about 3 minutes. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
and how long did it take you when you were in high school?
Oh, my gosh. Me and my buddy, when we was fishing, we fished about 1,200 hooks, and gosh, it would take us probably an hour to paddle those hooks out, get them in the water.
Wow.
And then after we did that, then we'd go into the shore and make our little camp, build us a fire, and cut the palmetto fronds and lay them down, and then make bed on top of the palmetto fronds. This one particular night up there, I remember we made our... We'd always go to a high shore, and this one particular place we fished didn't have a high shore. And we went in and made our beds, and gosh, about midnight, we woke up soaking wet, and the tide had come up so quick, so high, that we were soaking wet. Unbelievable. How can we do that? But anyway.
That's the worst sensation.
Waking
having been
up
camping
wet.
Myself.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
wake up
God.
Wet is just the worst. And it's dark and
yeah.
Don't know where you are and
it was terrible.
But what did your mother think about you spending all these nights outside?
I don't know. I never did. She never did say. We never did.
I guess you weren't getting into trouble, so.
No, but see, things were a lot different back then. You didn't have nowhere near the meanest back then that you have now. She didn't worry about it, of course. I don't know. We never discussed it, but I was under the impression that she kind of thought that we were adult at sub-teen, because we were doing
the work
of a man, and they just I guess she just never bothered her.
Probably about as safe out there as.
Well. Spending as much time around the water as we did, I guess so. Of course, she may have worried. I can't imagine her not worrying now with two of our own. But gosh, she went through it so many times. But anyway, that's.
Did you see a lot of wild animals? Were there still like panthers or anything around?
I have never seen I have never seen a panther that I know of.
Really?
Since we've been down here. Now, when we came down here, they told us about panthers.
Mm-hmm.
And as 7 and 8 year old child, just petrified because they say, boy, don't cook bacon in your house because panthers love bacon. And they can smell it cooking for miles. And they'll come and they'll jump in your kitchen window. And oh gosh, we were just petrified every time Ma would start frying any kind of pork. The panthers are going to come. Don't do that. The panthers are going to come. And they would say, oh, you can tell, boy. You can tell when a panther, because they scream just like a, they sound like a woman screaming. And oh, gosh, we were, you know. Oh, and we lived in the woods out here between Pomona and Wallaca, and we just knew the panther was going to get us. But we, I never
but
seen
the panthers didn't come.
Evidently,
you,
they
right?
didn't get us. But boy,
so
they had.
Funny. So you've never seen one?
I've never seen a panther in the wild, no.
Huh. Because no. I would just think that back then it must not have been as populated as now.
No, it wasn't. Have... Oh, man, it was beautiful back then.
Oh, I bet it was. I wish I could have seen it then.
Probably didn't appreciate just... it then like you would have.
No, no, but to go, to be able to go back and see it the way it was around here, mm. it was beautiful.
How about alligators back
oh,
then?
Oh, alligators were galore.
Really?
Oh,
everywhere?
Yeah, everywhere. And they are today, too. But yeah, alligators was everywhere back then. But the thing about it is back then, people would bootleg the alligators, and they would go out and shoot them at night. And alligators was more scared then.
Somebody else was telling
me
this.
Yeah, they were a lot more. Yeah, they were a lot more leery back then than they are now. Like, shucks, if they could feel the vibration of a motor running, God, a half mile away, they would sink. Go underwater. But now, shucks, motors don't bother me whatsoever. They just, like I'm running, when I'm running my crab pots out here, shucks, they'll doggone near come up there and get the bait out of the pot.
That's
I'm running right around there. But yeah, there's lots of alligators, lots of alligators.
Wow.
Even back whenever everybody was crying that, oh, the alligators are endangered.
There were
still
lots.
Oh, so many, so many.
Huh. So when you were in high school and fishing, you were on the St. John's?
No, right here. But, see, this lake is connected to the St. John's by Dunn's Creek.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, the little brook creek you came across? Okay.
Yeah, I
that
live
connects,
right up on the north side of that.
Now that
fish camp.
That connects this Lake Crescent to the St. John's River. And when I was a boy in high school, we would fish the St. John's River. And we would go, we would put in over here at Pomona Landing, and then we would run the boat up through Dunn's Creek and put our lines out in the river. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. Yeah. So you fished the river and the lake and the creek.
And yeah. And then back whenever we were all doing the illegal fishing, what we call the monkey fishing, gosh, we fished everywhere. We fished from Astor to Greencoat. All
That's
up
the
and
whole
down.
River.
Yeah,
just
we fished all up and down, yeah. And some of the guys would say, they would talk about fishing, they would say they were going to the Bubbles. And the Bubbles back then was Silver Springs.
Oh.
They would go right to Silver Springs and fish from Silver Springs back to the St. John's.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So this, of course, is a natural lake.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
this is
Georgia,
part of
North Carolina, Virginia, most of the lakes there are Army Corps of Engineers.
No. Like, this is natural. Yeah, this is part of the St. John's River. So I consider it part of the St. John. Yeah.
Does anything differ from this lake to the river, or the?
No.
Nothing's different.
No.
It's just the same.
Same.
Because it's so connected.
Yeah. You have the same species everywhere. Yeah.
They just go back and forth.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but...
I can talk?
Oh, yes, please do.
Well, tell her the very interesting part about the Indians that lived here and the Arrowheads, the boys that...
Well, I'm...
Really?
Yeah.
Indians? Here?
I don't know what tribe they were. Some guy around here said that they were a tribe that starts with M.
I wouldn't know.
Me neither. I don't know the name. But anyway, there used to be a settlement on this particular piece of ground right here. You see those old, did you notice the old pylons way out at the end of my dock out yonder?
Yeah,
those two tall ones?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the remnants of an old freight dock that used to be here when the steamboats run up in here.
Oh, I can't believe
believe
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the steamboats used to come up in here, and they would load freight on the steamboats right out of this dock here.
Well, what was here that they were loading freight?
They were loading fruit, citrus.
Oh.
Okay. They were loading wood. There was logging going on here.
Hmm.
And the whole business. And that's all that I know about it. Now, there used to be like a showboat. As a matter of fact, that's what they call it. It's
oh,
the
really?
Showboat. And there's a place right around...
Golly.
There's a place right around about a mile from here where the remnants of another dock just like that one is, and they call it the Showboat Cove. And the showboat used to come in there and tie up to this dock. And all the... Now, this is what was told to me.
Yeah,
all the people
right.
in the area back then would come over and just have a grand old time on the showboat.
Wouldn't that be fun if we could still have one?
Gosh,
wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
And I guess Wallaca was one of the big ports for the steamboats.
Yeah, yeah. And Crescent City. Yeah, Crescent City.
And Wallaca.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's... I heard that... who was telling me this? Henry Reeder or Mrs. Reeder,
mm-hmm.
I think. Was saying that, you know, that the steamboats really used to come into
yeah.
into Wallaca a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I just didn't know they'd come in.
Yeah, they came in here too. Yeah.
Via Dunn's Creek. I
yeah.
think. Boy, it
yeah,
looks small to me as I go across it to have a steamboat in it.
Yeah, it's kind of small. Yeah.
I mean,
but,
it's hard to imagine.
Yeah,
next time I go across that bridge,
yeah.
I'll just think
yeah.
about a steamboat going
yeah.
up there. These are pretty amazing. These are big.
Yeah, yeah.
I
there's
mean,
there's some good
and they're
pieces
complete.
There.
Yeah.
Goodness. They've got some more that's not... These are the ones that were perfect, but they've got some more that's got a corner missing or the back
God.
Parts missing or the point. But yeah, there's
that
all.
One is just classic.
Yeah, and this one here, too. This one's
oh, wow. It'd be fun to take that up to Gainesville and see if some Indian specialist up there could tell you about it.
Well, I can't pick it up. But anyway, that's a sandy one there.
That is neat.
And this is a tool. We've decided that is a
oh, yeah.
that is a cutting tool
oh,
or a skinning
wow.
tool.
Oh, it's sharp. Too.
Yeah, yeah. We've decided from looking at different books,
mm-hmm.
we've decided that. And there's another. That was probably also a skinning tool.
Well, to have found this many, this must have been a real center.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
I mean,
we feel that it was because we've got pottery, different pieces
wow.
of with only small pieces, but pottery with all different designs. Lines
really?
On. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Cindy may be hunting up some pieces of it.
That's amazing. Somebody really should look at that stuff.
Well,
I bet they could really tell you a lot.
We had a neighbor over here for a while that took some pieces of it, and he said he had a friend at the university, and he was going to take it over to him.
Uh-huh.
But we never heard anything from him. The neighbor
yeah.
moved, and we never did hear what came out of it. But anyway.
Because that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Those are... I don't know anything about Indians. I wish I did.
I don't either.
I wouldn't know it one era from another.
Well, I thought only Seminoles was in Florida, but evidently that's not the case according to some of the old stories that go around.
Yeah, the only thing I do know is that the Seminoles came in later. They came from up north and came down
yeah.
here. But there was another tribe before that.
Look at these. These are pieces of pottery the boys have
found. He was just I mean, this is really
interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
They each must have had their own design.
Well, I wonder how old this stuff is.
I don't know.
You know,
yeah.
1700s, or it could be the 700 BC.
We had sent, I was just telling her that Ben had taken some, but he never got back to it.
But that apparently was the edge. They maybe
right.
had a pot or.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Wow, that makes me curious,
yeah.
you know?
yeah.
It's kind of neat, then, to think of Indians and all being
yeah.
there on the
yeah.
same bit of land
yeah,
as
sure,
yours.
It sure does, yeah.
Well, another question I had, coming back to Catlines, was
yeah.
When it seems to me like a lot of people start out with Catlines. Do they do that because it's cheap
exactly.
to start one? Okay.
Exactly right. That is the seller getting into the fishing business. You can start...
Yeah.
It doesn't take a lot of money it doesn't take a lot of investment to get started in catline. Because you don't have bait. You don't have the expense of buying bait.
What do you use for bait?
Shrimp, mostly. Some people use soap.
And you can get the shrimp out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, not out of this lake. You used to be able to. That's one of the things that's changed
oh, yeah.
here. You can't do that anymore. But you try to use the natural baits.
Mm-hmm.
anything, shrimp, shad minnows.
Did you say soap?
Soap, yeah, yeah. Like right now, I think there's a couple of catliners out in the lake now that are using soap.
I just can't imagine. Well, soap.
Yeah, take a bar of soap,
uh-huh.
and you cut it up in little cubes of about a quarter inch or 3/8 inch cube.
Mm-hmm.
And you just take that little cube and stick the hook right in that little cube.
They like that.
They will eat it. Now, I don't know. It's not one of the better baits, but like when the water gets real cold and you can't find the shrimp or you don't have any other bait, then you can use the soap, and it will catch some amount of fish.
And just like ivory soap.
Yeah, yeah. You take ivory or camay, or we used to use P&G soap. That was the old standard.
Like Octagon?
We never did use Octagon, but yeah, there was a soap that was called P&G soap.
Wow.
Way back years ago. And that was the standard, boy. If you used soap, you had to use P&G. And
have you had pretty good luck with using soap?
I tell you, I could never catch fish with soap. I tried it on several occasions, and I just couldn't get them to bite. But the family that used to live next door here, one of the sons is in fishing, and he would go out right down there at the edge of the lake every day. He would go out there with his soap and run his cat lines, and he would bait while in the water. He would leave his cat line out, and he would go out every day and bait in the water.
And just pull it up.
And bait with soap, and he'd come in every day with a good catch. And here I'd go out with my lines baited with all soap and everything, and I was going to do big one, and I couldn't catch enough to pay the gas bill. I just didn't have a knack for fishing with soap.
Somebody was telling me, and I can't remember who, that they used beef hearts.
We used to use beef heart. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And was that cheap? You could just go to the.
Yeah, you could go to the store and buy your beef heart and cut it up in small cubes.
So that makes more sense to me than soap.
Yeah, we've even used beef stew. We've
really?
Cut up beef stew and used beef stew.
Huh. Watermelon.
Yeah, a watermelon. The same guy that I was telling you about the soap. At certain times of the year when the watermelon are in, he would take watermelon.
I'd like watermelon.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he used watermelon. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the other day, and the Schmitz did too, that Mr. Sheffield has a reputation of really being a good catliner. Now, what makes him a good catliner?
Instinct.
Just knowing, like, where to put...
I'll tell you what Dave used to do. I never saw him do it, but they used to tell me that he would do it. Dave would put his line out and run over it, and if he didn't have any fish, he would move the entire line. Before he set it, I don't mean pick it back up.
Uh-huh.
I mean he would tie tie the line onto the boat and drag the line to a new location and set it again. Now they tell this story on him. I never seen him do it, but some of the old timers says that he would actually move his line if he didn't catch fish within a certain amount of time.
Wow! So it seems like diligence is what.
Of course, now, again, he's been in that same area for years and years and years.
So he knows.
So he knows, and just like anybody else, if you pay attention and you either write it down or I can't remember, so I keep a log. I write
you
down.
Do.
Oh, I've kept a log for... I started keeping a daily log in 1973, and I write down everything that I've done for that day.
Like where you put... your traps or whatever, and how many you get, and how much you used, and how much you paid out in bait, and how much.
No, not all that. That comes out in my books.
Records.
Yeah,
yeah,
but
right.
But as far as what I did, where I went, and just basics, weather, what the weather was like, and so forth and so on. If I could put all that and hook it into a computer, then see.
Wow, you have the whole lake down.
Yeah.
I heard Charlie Butler in Wallaca does that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I think he, in fact, told me that is where I heard that.
Yeah.
That he keeps just everything every day when he comes in. Yeah. Where
you can't rely on memory anymore.
Yeah.
You have so much going on, like
especially
at
times. Especially in an area like this. I mean, this is really huge.
Yeah.
Although you must know it real well by now.
Well, I can find any one of them. I fish two different trap sets.
Uh-huh.
And on the foggiest day, I can go to them.
Wow.
I don't have any trouble.
No,
matter of fact, I love the fog.
Do you?
Oh, gosh, that's my best friend. I like it, the feeling of being out there in the fog. secluded all by myself. Nobody can see me, and I'm just...
No speedboats.
No, man. I'm just in my seventh heaven when it's foggy and I'm out there working.
Wow.
Yeah, I love it.
That's neat.
And yeah. I could probably go to any part of the shoreline in a fog and within 100... see 100 feet of the shoreline and tell you exactly where we are.
Wow. That's amazing.
That's knowing the lake pretty
good.
It
is, and it's from being out on it like, and paying attention, like you say.
Yeah.
Now, when you're setting a trot line or cat line,
okay.
as you say, do you set it like across the current, or do you set it going with the current, or, I mean, which way does it run?
Okay. Whatever suits the individual. Now, me, when I put one out, I put it out whichever way the wind is blowing or whichever way the wind's going to be blowing when I'm picking it up the next day. So I pay attention to the weather. Like, for example, if I was putting out cat line today, I would put the cat line out running northwest to southeast because that's the way the wind's blowing now.
Even if that was like across the current?
Yeah.
Okay.
In this lake, we don't have a real strong flowing current.
Right.
But I do that when you're putting it out. The reason that I put it out going with the wind is because if you put it out going into the wind and you get a tangle and you have to stop, then your boat drifts back over the line and you've got one mess when it does that.
Okay.
So if you're putting it out with the wind, when you get a tangle, your line stays straight behind you, and there's no chance of you getting drifting back over and getting in a mess.
That's
the reason I do it with the wind.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it really doesn't matter where the current is.
No.
I just, you know, as a novice, when you think of the, you know, the river, I would think, oh, well, you put it
across.
Like that, or a gill net or whatever. But that's not it at all.
Not in the lake. But now in the river, it probably would be better to run crossways the current.
Because the gill nets that we were picking up today, it seemed to me they were running like, let me see, here's the bridge. It was sort of like this.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of a bend, but it was pretty much with the current.
He probably does that because of the channel. See, he can't have that thing in the channel there.
And, in the deep middle part?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So that was... probably the reason that he's got it over to the side there and run catty-cornered like that. Because I know where his stuff is up there, just to the north
right
of the bridge.
By the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was just wondering, like you say, for a gill net, I would, in my mind, have thought, oh, you'd want to put it right across,
yeah.
but not really. Because he does real well, so.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
Now, when we was fishing the cat lines in the river years ago, we put it along the shoreline. So that would have been with the current, too, see?
Running
with the current.
Like that.
Yeah. But then at times, at certain times of the year, there's a fish comes up in the river called a pogie, menhaden.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
They fish for menhaden in Virginia.
Yeah, well, I got the national fisherman over there. They got a deal on that pound netting, but when the menhaden come in, sometimes the big catfish follow them and feed on them. And there was times
like this fish.
Yeah. There was at times whenever we would cat line up at the mouth of the creek in the river,
mm-hmm.
and we would run the lines across ways the current. Then. Because we were using the bait fish, the pogies. We would catch them with a cast net right there as they would come down the river, and then we'd just bait the line across, and we was catching nice fish like that.
Wow.
But we don't do that anymore. We haven't done that since, late 50s. Late 50s.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, there aren't many pogies or menhadens around now, are there? No, not too many. They caught like... 5 or 6 in that gill net this morning, and they just fed them pelicans.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no market for them.
Not down here, except for crab bait, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's...
Porgies. Such a funny little name.
No, pogies.
Pogies.
No R, yeah. Pogies.
P-O-G-Y-S?
P-O-G-I-E-S.
I-E-S.
Uh-huh, pogies, yeah. They're the same thing as menhaden. We just call them pogies.
Just a local name?
Yeah. Well, local. Some of the guys on the coast call them pogies also. But, we've all... I don't know.
Because Menhaden up on the eastern shore of Virginia was a big business, I believe.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah. Or used to be, I guess. I don't know if it is now.
Yeah, it still is. Not as big because the fish aren't as plentiful, of course, but or according to the articles that I read, anyway.
Yeah, yeah, that National Fisherman is a neat newspaper or magazine.
Yeah.
I've looked at it a few times. It's really some pretty fantastic gear in there. It looks like a spaceship more than a boat, some of those things.
I'll tell you.
Well, you said you used to get the big catfish. What's the biggest one you've ever caught from this river?
38 pounds was the biggest one I've ever caught.
Yeah. That's really big.
Yeah. Now, back in the same days, some of the people boast of 45-pound catfish, but I didn't see them, and I didn't catch anything myself bigger than 38.
Hmm. And when did the seining days stop? Your dad used to seine.
Yeah,
right?
He did.
That was pretty much the accepted method.
That
out
was,
here for,
for
fishermen who were supporting a family who'd gotten beyond just having cat lines.
Cat lines. Back then, when the seining program was going on, was a I don't know why. They just couldn't catch fish, or too hot, or whatever.
Hmm.
But they just at times they just didn't haul seine.
Would they stop when the fish were spawning?
I don't know. I can't answer that because I just don't know. But. It takes several men on a seine crew, so rather than have say for example five individual fishermen, you had five individuals fishing together in one fishery.
Right.
So these people were working and making money, but instead of having five people going out in five different directions, they all went in one direction. But
so they were like a little corporation.
And that's basically the way the seine crews went. Now, it fizzled out here. They closed it down in the late 40s. They just cut it off. I'm saying they, Florida Game and Freshwater Fish Commission, cut it off. Okay. Then, or late 40s or early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Then, they opened it back up on a limited basis. In other words, you could take certain species at certain times of the year and so forth like this. And then they just stopped it altogether. No more haul seining whatsoever. With the exception of shad, the white shad, roe shad.
Yeah.
They could do it. Yeah, they could do it for that with a permit. And most of the guys kept their permits up. For years and years.
Why did Fish and Game stop the seine?
Because of public pressure. The public just would not accept the haul seines in the lakes and the rivers. They just could not accept that and would not accept that. And there was, from the studies that I've seen and heard of, there was no biological reason for them to stop a haul seine as far as any detrimental effect.
Exactly what I heard yesterday from a Fish and Game biologist.
There was no biological reason. And, but
it was just public pressure.
Public pressure.
They had this idea.
That's basically the reason.
That's real interesting.
So, that's so.
Because it seems like that haul seining, the older fishermen I talked to, Doc Bennett and who else? Can't quite remember. We're saying that the haul seining was good because it cleaned a lot of the trash fish out of the river and gave the more desirable fish more room to grow.
Absolutely.
It would seem somebody who really understood that would want you to do haul seining, get rid of all the gizzard shad and all the stuff
and kept the lake clean too, as far as stirring the silt up and the mud and keeping it moving. You see that?
I never thought of that.
Well, when you have that 2 miles of lead line out there and you're dragging it around, you see, it's gonna keep that stuff stirred up and keep it moving constantly.
Which is better than letting it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It keeps the bottom clean, keeps that stuff moving. You don't have that that just sediment that just sits mm-hmm. there all the time, like you do now. It just, that's it.
Yeah.
Nothing stirs it. It don't go nowhere.
Really?
We haven't had a hurricane in several years. Lucky. That would do it, yeah, but
right.
Who wants that? Yeah. Bring back the whole
save,
thing. Yeah. But it would be cost prohibitive now to get set up in the whole same business. Gosh, Daddy and them, they would have a mile and a half or 2 miles of seam back then.
I can't believe that.
Yeah.
That would be so much.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I think people don't understand about fishing is that the investment, the monetary investment in equipment.
Now you just couldn't
is
do
just,
it. Yeah, you just couldn't.
It's so high. I mean, for people who, you know, grow up in it, you just keep, you know, you have a few traps,
you
and
have
them
to.
Up, but
you've got
but
to
just go out and say, well, okay, I want to start tomorrow, it would be just thousands of dollars.
Cost prohibitive. That's why most people start with the trot lines, and why most people stay with them, with the cat lines, because it is minimum investment.
Yeah. What's the next step beyond cat line? Like if you were wanting to get into fishing and you started out running three cat lines and you do that for a while, then what would be the next thing you'd probably buy?
Depending on your choice of equipment, most people now buy hook nets.
Mm-hmm.
That's what most people go into now is hook nets.
Instead of traps.
Very few people anymore fish traps.
Now why is that?
Labor.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a lot
of
work.
Trap fishing is lots of work.
Why?
Because you've got to keep the traps clean and you've got to stand over that hot tar pot unless you use the vinyl coated wire. Now, a lot of people are getting back into it with the vinyl coated wire, which reduces the tar problem. But
I believe Robbie Scholes had vinyl coated wire, didn't he?
He does. He
okay.
does have some vinyl coated wire traps, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Fish traps.
Mm-hmm. Fish
yeah.
traps, yeah.
yeah. But see, up until say, I would say 3 or 4 years ago, there was very few trap fishermen left.
Wow.
And then the vinyl wire came on, and then some more started building the traps out of the vinyl and got into it a little more
mm-hmm.
then. But at one time, there was very few of us that was trap fishing.
Now, Mr. Schmidt had some traps.
Yeah.
That he mm-hmm. dips in tar. He didn't
yeah.
use the vinyl.
Yeah.
That seems to be the old-timey
yeah.
method
yeah,
is the tar method.
Yeah.
Now, are there strict regulations about those traps, about how big they
yeah.
can be?
Yeah, they can only be so big.
Did your dad use fish traps?
Yeah, he did.
He
That's
did.
All he used. I mean, when he
Besides
was
the
when
seining.
He yeah, when seining was stopped, then he went to wire traps because that's what he wanted to do, I guess, because hook nets were not heard of back then. Hook
really?
Nets didn't come on the scene until gosh, when did they come in the 60s? They may
really?
Have been
wow.
going before then, but they was not
That's
there was not as many of it as there is mm-hmm. now, and wire traps was just the thing to get into, because everybody fished wire traps then, river and the whole business.
Huh. Now,
and
would your dad make his own traps?
Made his own traps, and that's where I learned from
uh-huh.
making them. And we made them at home when we was kids. We made them for other fishermen. The people would come from Astor; they'd come up and get dad to build up their traps for the next season. At one time, you only fish traps for one season, and you throw them away because of the rust. They would rust out, and you didn't
sure.
do that. We didn't use tar on our traps until mid-50s. We'd build them and fish them for one season, and then build a new set for the next season.
How long do they last with the tar?
I got some now that I'm fishing since 72.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
It's a good long time.
Of course, you got to handle them. You got to take care of them. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be careful with them, and you got to keep them tarred up, because if you let them go for very long, even with tar on, where the tar breaks,
sure.
it'll get in and it'll start rusting, and it'll rust out underneath the tar.
Can you mend them if they start?
I do that. I go in and cut out a whole big section and put a patch in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I keep mine patched up. It's better than going and building a whole new trap.
So
So how much would it cost you to go out and build a trap today? How much would the wire and all cost approximately, and then the tar,
the wire,
and then the time?
Gosh, time is the biggest thing. The wire costs over, now to get the 18-gauge American wire, and that's what I like to use. You can get a cheaper wire. You can get a 20-gauge, a 19-gauge, 20-gauge, but it's flimsy wire. It won't hold up. I like to use the 18-gauge, and it comes in 4-foot rolls, 4-foot lengths, not lengths, but depths, and 5-foot depths, and it's 150 feet. Okay, and the 4-foot rolls, depending on if you get vinyl or galvanized, I always get galvanized. It defeats the purpose for me to buy vinyl and then dip it in the hot tar. So I still buy the vinyl, galvanized. Galvanized on a 4-foot roll now costs approximately $180 for one roll. 5-foot roll is over $200. I believe it's about
$220. Wow.
Oh. Versus when Daddy was buying it, you could buy it for $20, $25 a roll. But anyway.
Gosh.
Matter of fact, the first roll I bought, I paid $37.50 for it when I came back here in 71.
I guess it's gone up.
Yeah, slightly. So anyway, you get, depending on how you cut them, of course, you get 15 or 16 traps per roll of wire.
Wow, that's all?
That's all. I say, depending on how you cut them.
Sure.
I have a couple of different designs, but most of them are basic. Mm-hmm. You start with a basic wire dimensions. They can't be more than 32 inches in diameter by regulation.
Mm-hmm.
They can't be more than 7 feet in length. I can't imagine anybody wanting to fish a 7-foot wire trap, though.
Aren't most of them about 4 or 5 feet?
4 to 5 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of mine are that. They're either 4 or 5. I don't have any bigger than that. So, tar costs now, a drum of a 55-gallon drum of tar costs about $185.
Wow.
This is coal tar, C-O-A-L.
Yeah.
Coal tar. When I came back here in 71 and was starting to set up, $35 for a drum of tar.
That's really remarkable.
So,
that all adds up.
Yeah, and how long it takes to build one? Gosh.
Do you sit down and build it from start to finish, or do you do the?
I like to.
Okay, so you don't like make a lot of the insides and then make a lot of the outsides and put them together?
We used to do that when we was at home, when all of us kids was at home. We'd cut out a roll of wire and everybody would have his own little job and he'd do his own little job, went together, kind of like a assembly line. Yeah, kind of like assembly line.
Uh-huh.
But when I'm doing it, I don't do it. I like to do one trap at a time. There are a lot of reasons, but the basic reason is I got so many other things going on. I don't want to get a bunch of them started and then have a bunch of wire sitting out here in the elements for months, see. So I build one trap, that way when I get it complete, I can take it down, and when I fire the tar pot, it's ready to be dipped.
Yeah.
That way I don't have it sitting around getting ready to rust.
Sure.
That's the basic reason that I do one at a time.
So will it take you like a half a day to build one, or a whole day?
As slow as I've gotten now, yeah, I could probably put one together in maybe 3 hours, 2.5 to 3 hours.
That sounds fast.
Well,
wow.
That might be pushing a little bit. It might take a little bit longer, but there's a lot of wires to be bent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you use like just tools, or how do you?
Just a pair of pliers and wire cutters. That's all I use.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's neat.
Yeah, that's all I use.
Now, the traps your dad would make, how did they change when regulations started to?
Oh, and another regulation too is they have to have two funnels in one end. You can't have a funnel in each end.
Okay.
They have to be in one end, and one end has to be closed.
Now, why is that? They just decided.
Yeah, that's the way they want. No, that's the way we built them for years and years. We've always used two funnels.
Why would you use two funnels?
Well, we've tried it with one, and it just don't catch as good. It just does not catch the amount of fish that the two does. And I don't know why. But the second one inside, the first one is open. The first funnel going in is just an open hole, and it tapers in. Mm-hmm. The second one has the trap door on it.
Right.
Now, the trap door is what keeps him from coming back out once he's in the body section, if you didn't have that. We used to build one we call an open throat trap. Now, it had fingers on it, if you can visualize. Mm-hmm. It would have four fingers this way and two fingers this way, okay? And they would come together, and they would have an opening about yay. Mm-hmm. And then the fish would squeeze through. And once he's through, then it had sharp points sticking out on the inside, see.
And he could squeeze through just
sure,
a couple inches.
Well, see, actually, you had more than a couple inches because these fingers now, they would not be, they wouldn't be tied together here. You would have about 6 inches back up here where they were not tied together. And they had spring in them like so.
So he could
push it apart and it would come back to this, see. And that was a style that we fished in moving water, so that whenever you put your trap over, if the current caught it and rolled it over, then it still your fish still could not get out. But if you fished a trap door there, you see, in moving water, and it flipped it over, you've got an open hole there, and all the fish will exit. And believe me, they will exit.
They will.
Though in a heartbeat, yeah.
Oh.
They can find that. Oh, they're gone. That's the problem I have out here now is so many people perch fish out here anymore, you see. And they're pulling, trolling around, and they get hooked in the trap. When they get hooked into it, and they're trolling, and it rolls the trap over, and it opens the door.
And your fish
exit.
Go back.
Yeah.
Huh. How many fish will a good trap hold?
Mm. I'll tell you what. The most fish that I ever seen in one trap, if you can believe this, was so heavy that my brother and I could not even pick it up and put it on the boat.
Really?
And this was in the 70s. So many fish went in that trap that they smothered themselves.
Oh, I can't believe this.
They actually smothered themselves and died in the trap. There was...
That must have been a magic trap.
The only the one did it though, out of all the traps, and that's the only one that I've ever seen do that. So many fish went in this one particular trap.
How many pounds of fish must have been in there?
There must have been 300 pounds of fish in that one trap.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was to us too. We couldn't believe it. We just could not believe it. It was so heavy. But I tell you, the biggest thrill to me is going out there, pulling my trap lines, and when you pull that line up, the very first, when it comes taut the first time, you know whether you've got fish in it or not.
Right.
If that, there are different feels.
Yeah.
Different species of fish in that trap will react different ways.
Really? Like move around differently? Or
channel cats, if the trap has channel cats in it, when you pull it the first time, you'll feel a real heavy sensation, and then all of a sudden, the line will go slack, and then all you do is just pull the slack line in, because those channel cats, they come to the top just like that, and they push that trap right to the top just like that. Fantastic. Well, they'll just shove that thing to the top like that.
Wow.
Biggest thrill you ever. Bullheads.
He gets on high out there.
Bullheads.
it's a good thing, since that's what he does for a living.
Bullheads are different. You pull a trap when it's full of bullheads, and it'll come up heavy. All the way. I mean, you'd think you're just pulling up the bottom of the lake, and those things are there, nose down, just like
they're
this.
Trying to go
and
that
they're going
way.
Back down, boy, just as hard as they can go back down. And you're pulling, and you get that trap of the water almost to the top, and then this big ball busts the top of the water like that.
Really?
Oh, gosh, it's fantastic. And red cats, they do.
Do they go down? Or
they go down like bullheads, but so much harder than bullheads, the reds do. It's just.
And they're strong. Yeah. The reds are big.
Yeah, I've had, well, back when Daddy was fishing, it was a different setup. Now we fish our traps on what we call lines, and it's a main trunk line that extends, again, to the individual fisherman's satisfaction for X number of feet. We use rods anymore. We used to use blocks, and we'd tie the rope on the end of the blocks, and we'd push them off,
like,
and then we'd go the other.
Block?
Yeah, and then you'd pull the line real tight, and you'd let these go, and then you'd have your main line. That would be your trunk line. Now we use rods, and we take rods, and we drive reinforcement rods in the bottom of the lake with ropes tied to it, you see.
Oh.
That way you don't have to haul out a ton of blocks to put your lines out.
Sure.
Once you set a trap line or a hook net line, it usually stays in that one place because you don't normally ever move it. You know that that's where you want to fish and you stay there. Now, after setting those lines, the main line, off of the main line you have drops. Every so many feet you'll have a drop. And that drop is another piece of length of rope. And it's what you attach the trap to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you've got the line going this way, and then you've got the lines going this way that the traps are attached to.
Right.
Now, then, when we do this, we normally fish these either throat to the current or tail to the current so that it goes crossways, see?
Okay.
You follow me?
Yeah.
Yeah, like this. You would be, the trap would be off of this main line here, like so. Okay. Now, Daddy used to do it different. Back in the days when Daddy fished, we didn't have the boat traffic out here that we have now. Gosh, he'd go out, you'd go out there all day and you never see another, never see another boat. And he would fish his on what we call stakes. They'd drive a pole in the bottom of the lake.
A cypress or pine?
Pine, normally pine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would go about 50 feet or 70 feet, and you'd put down another one. And back when he was doing it, you could only fish 30 traps. That was the legal limit.
That's like in the 40s or 50s?
50s.
50s.
That's all the traps that you could fish on a permit. Wow. You were permitted to fish 30 traps per permit. That's all he could fish was 30 traps. So he had his 30 stakes, okay, placed along a particular section of the lake over here. And he would put his trap right down beside the stake. Okay?
Right.
You fish the same side of the stake. You didn't move your trap around. You put the trap back in the same exact spot every time. Now, he would use what we call a hook pole. And that's a, back then it was usually
like a
sapling with an old homemade hook on the end of it.
Oh.
Wire hook.
Uh-huh.
And the thing about it is, is you would stick the hook down there and hook the trap. And as soon as that hook touched the trap, you could tell if there was fish in the trap. Because those fish would hit the wire like this, and that old wire hook would telegraph up that pole, and you could hear it rattling, boy. You could just hear that thing just go, like that.
That's so neat.
And that thing, depending on the kind of fish you had, of course,
sometimes
there would be so many fish in the trap that they would actually lift the trap off the bottom and move it away from the stake. So that if he didn't find it where it's supposed to be, then he'd have to start hunting around and eventually find it. And he's been over there, and I've been in the boat with him. When he's hooked the trap, and it sent the telegraph up the pole, and he starts picking it up, and that thing, now we're talking about a 12 or 14 foot hook pole that he's raising it with, right?
Yeah.
And that trap would come out your arm the full length of that pole away from the boat, from those fish would just take it off like that.
No.
Fantastic. He and I went out one day over there in a Myron War flat bottom boat, 16 foot. We raised 16 fish traps and we sunk the boat.
Nice.
We actually put so many fish in the boat that we sunk the boat. When we was coming back, we ran the shoreline all the way back around. We was fishing the lake straight across yonder, and we was putting in at Pomona Landing right down here. And we ran the shoreline. When we got through raising, we knew we had more than we should have had in there. So we ran the shoreline all the way back down that other shore, and we got up here at Dunn's Creek, and we had to go across deep water at Dunn's Creek, okay? So I was running the motor, and Daddy was in the bow of the boat. We had fish in the bow, we had fish in the bulkhead in the middle, and we had fish in the stern. We had
the whole
boat was fish, solid fish. So when we cut across Dunn's Creek up there, there was a little bit of ripple on the water, about this much. And I cut across at Dunn's Creek and I went towards Willow Point. And over there at Willow Point, the swells got a little bit higher. And
like a foot maybe?
Well, not quite that. I would say 8 inches maybe. Gosh, they weren't. And the wheels weren't running an old 25 horse motor. That was as big as you could get back then. And all it would do was just push that boat through the water, and it was plowing like this. The water was just spraying right over the bow stem. And Daddy hollered something from the bow of the boat to the stern. I couldn't hear what he said, so I cut the motor. And when I cut the motor, she just shut the submarine just like that.
No!
Don't shut the motor! So, guys, he jumped overboard in the bow, and I jumped over in the stern. And luckily, at Willow Point over there, there's a bar that runs out in the lake about 200 yards. And luckily, we was on that bar when it went down. He jumped over and grabbed the bow and held the bow, and I jumped over and held the stern, and we waded it into shore, and then we pushed it from Willow Point back to Pomona Landing, about a mile over there. From, you know, we waded
it
up into shore.
I hope it was summertime.
I can't for the life of me remember what time of year it was.
I bet if it was bitter cold, you would remember.
We didn't lose one fish that we knew of, because in the length of time it took us to go from over there to there, the fish had all died. So that there was because now we're talking back when you're going 2 miles an hour, you know, putt putt like this all the time. We're talking a long time. But as best I remember, I don't remember us losing one fish out of that boatload of fish. But boy, we'd have been in serious trouble if it had went down at the mouth of the creek, because that's about 25 foot of water there.
You were lucky you were on a sandbar.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. Time.
I told you, you got to keep me straight.
No, I love this. I have pages of questions. Y'all throw me out before I'm done.
Well, do I put it in the oven and keep it warm, or do
No, we eat it now. We eat it while it's hot.